I'm Dan Gibbons, and on behalf of the City Club of Chicago, welcome back to the City Club of Chicago. All sorts of familiar faces. Hope you all took some sort of public transportation to get here. I rode my electric scooter. Hope it's still there when I leave. As you'll see today, and I'm getting started on time, maybe even a minute early, because we have so much to discuss, and what we're going to try to do today is make it more of a dialogue with so many stakeholders that are here in the audience, because we only have so much space on this stage, and there are just so many people who are involved in this important issue of transit in Illinois, too many to be up here. So we recognize that, and anyway, I'll explain how we're going to do that in a minute, but we are going to get rolling as soon as we acknowledge. Of course, we have to acknowledge our sponsors, because City Club couldn't exist without all of you and bringing all the right folks with you to these events. So thank you to the Chicago Federation of Labor, right over here, to Clayco. Mary Person is here. Thank you, Mary. Cozen O'Connor, Public Strategies, and Pat Carey right in front here. The Metropolitan Pier and Exposition Authority. Of course, welcome Loretta Clark and your team. Thank you, Loretta, for all you do. Neckritz Amdor Anderson Group. Neckritz Amdor Anderson Group. Onyx Strategic Partners. White and Company. Thank you all for your sponsorship and support of City Club as we continue to have these great conversations. And thanks again to so many of you for being here. As I mentioned, there are stakeholders beyond those who will be up on this podium, on this stage at this podium. We have Aaron Ailman here from Metropolitan Planning. Representative Tarver, Curtis Tarver, is here. We have a couple of other elected officials you'll hear about that will be on the stage, so we'll get to them in a minute. Mary Ellen Karen from After School Matters. Mary Ellen. The CTA Acting President Nora Learson is here. Thank you, Nora, for being here. Clayton Harris is here from Speaker Welch's office. Tom Katark from the Civic Committee. Our Inspector General, Deb Witzberg, welcome back. And of course, our partner, my partner in this today, is David Greising, from the Better Government Association. You know you're doing something well, and you've got the Inspector General and the BGA and the Civic Committee and labor and elected officials from both sides of the aisle. So I just want to remind everybody what you're getting here at City Club. We have some amazing folks. We're obviously doing something right. I'm not patting myself on the back, but I think all of you being in this room makes stuff happen in Chicago and in Illinois. So it's very much appreciated. Thank you to all those folks for being here. I'm going to hand this over to David in just a minute, and who will guide us in this panel. But we're actually calling it a conversation instead of a panel. It's not a prescribed solution. I don't think anyone has a fully prescribed solution for fixing transit in Illinois. But there are so many of you, like labor, like the sheriff's office. We have Ro Khan and Brad here from Sheriff Dart's office. Safety is a huge issue. Labor is a huge piece of this puzzle. Legislation is so much of it. There are all these pieces. And then, of course, the private sector and how you all factor in. So what I'm going to do is sit down in that seat over there with a microphone, and David's going to come up here and introduce this panel, and we are going to incorporate some other voices during the conversation. And then, of course, if we have some time after, we'll still do some questions. But we have some voices in the audience that are so much a part of our civic community and so much a part of the transportation system that we're going to do our best to make this one of, I think, will have to be many conversations. So, appreciate your attention and your involvement as we continue this throughout the next hour or so. And I'm going to ask, as I said, our partner in this, who's been thinking this through with us, David Greising from Better Government Association, to join me here. Thank you, David. Thank you for your ideas, for your partnership, for your trust in City Club. and for thinking all the efforts that you put into making today a great conversation and others that we're going to have soon. So please welcome David Greising from the BGA. Yeah. Okay. Well, so yeah. Why don't we? And I'll do this because I did not introduce. Again, we have State Representative Cam Buckner, State Senator Don DeWitt, and Jackie Grim. Jackie Grimshaw from Chicago CNT. They're going to join us up here for the panel. If you guys could come on up while David gets started, please welcome our panelists. You're going to hear a lot more from them in a couple of minutes. Thank you all for being here and for all the work you're doing on behalf of our city and our state.
Thank you all. Jackie and I were just catching up over our brief lunch, and I mentioned to her that I started out in journalism in Chicago covering Harold Washington running for mayor. And Jackie, being Jackie, said, "Well, yeah, of course I remember you." Said, "Weren't you covering that with David Axelrod?" And in fact, yes, David Axelrod was the political editor of the Tribune at the time. And covering Harold was one of the kind of great opportunities for me in my career. What a change he brought to the city of Chicago in many, many positive ways. So today's panel is, as Dan said, really meant to bring us up to date. But the title was intentional, How Do We Get There?, which is how do we get to transit reform, meaningful transit reform in northeastern Illinois. Dan, right before he went up, he handed me a note from somebody who's here, and please apologize, Steve, if I mispronounce your name, Steve Rinks. There he is. Steve handed Dan a note, and I'm going to start with this observation, says Steve. If each or every stakeholder expects to get something, then each or every stakeholder will have to give something. It's an interesting way to frame the discussion here. We are at a moment where we're facing the immediate fiscal cliff of $771 million. We're facing a need on the order of $1.5 billion for the combined system of the RTA, the CTA, Metra, and PACE. The legislation that had been expected and hoped for came very close but did not pass. And so while we're waiting for passage of legislation, there also is this looming fiscal cliff and what the repercussions of that may be. And then we have the question of how do we get there? How do we get to reform? So the conversation is going to first cover governance. We'll spend a moment talking about safety, and then we'll get to revenue. And again, this will be less about what happened or didn't happen during the spring session, but more forward-looking, how do we get to some sort of resolution of the key issues. And so let me just start. We spent much of the spring session looking and hearing that it sounded as if there would be action on governance and that revenue would be dealt with at some point later. The Senate, late in the session, sort of surprised many of us who were watching it with actually bringing up a revenue proposal. And then the House was not able, in the time allotted, was not able to act, and so we got no legislation. Cam, let me please start with you being on the House side. Did the revenue development from the Senate come as a surprise to you all in the House? If so, kind of just tell us what it looked like at the end game as May 31st deadline approached.
Well, thank you, David. And I'll start off by, since we're in Chicago in the interregnum between spring and summer, I'll start off by talking about baseball. Right? many folks remember the famous 8-8-88, right? The first Cubs night game with lights. But another date in 88 was June 30th of 88, which was when the clock stopped in Springfield in order to give the White Sox what they needed to move forward with the stadium. We no longer stop clocks. And so for those of us in Springfield who were really working to try to get this over the finish line before the end of session, that was no longer an option. So to answer your question, it was a bit of a surprise that the entire revenue package that the Senate took up was there at that point in time. We had been working pretty closely in both chambers and with the governor's office to make sure that we brought forth a package that would deal with reform, governance, and structure in that space, and that we did not think that we were in a place that we could responsibly take up revenue yet. That was the stance of the House. We've got 118 members, obviously 78 members in the Democratic caucus, and we had not had a intentional conversation about what that revenue would look like, how it would work, where it would go, and how to make it happen. We had always said, both myself and Leader Evdina Delgado and Speaker Welch, under his direction, that there would be no revenue without reform. And so for us, reform was the most important part to get done first. But once the Senate started moving, we decided to let them do that, and then we would figure out if it got to us in time, what the next step was. Obviously, it got to us at about 11:57 that night, and we don't stop clocks anymore. So.
Had you stopped the clock, how long do you think it might have taken?
Another hour, two, three hours, maybe.
Okay. You know, there's a lot of talk about all of the work that went on prior to that deadline. And, Jackie, you've been in that room. You were in that room, and you've been in many, many rooms over the years. Give us a picture of what it was like those last few days as the deadline was approaching and the work was both the Senate and the House teams were trying to get this done.
Can I just do a piece of nostalgia?
Yes, please.
When I was working in the General Assembly on a regular basis, we stopped the clock all the time.
We've lost our way, Jackie.
I remember having picnics for the 4th of July on the Capitol lawn. So so I don't know. There are pluses and minuses. But, yeah, so being in the negotiating room for about the last month, not just the last few days. It was about starting with the RTA Act is where we started. But we had two bills. We had the bill that was the bills that were introduced by Senator Villavalem and Representative Evdina Delgado. And we also had the bill that Labor had put together. Getting to goals, so to speak, is that we had to look at provisions in each bill and decide, you know, which provisions we wanted to go with. And so in the room, of course, there were the advocates. I'm part of the Illinois Clean Jobs Coalition, and we are a coalition of about 200 groups from around the state. And we started working on this bill, what we hoped to be the bill, about 3 years ago, I think, or something like that. And so the advocates were every step of the way. They helped us while we were doing the part process and responding to the outreach that CMAP did all the way up until, you know, 1 o'clock in the morning on June 1st. So the advocates, they were represented by several groups. First, you mentioned Elaine Neckrich. She was her firm was the consultant for us. Elaine, of course, had a long, illustrious career as a legislator, so she understands the process quite well. And Steve Anderson, one of the other members, was there. So Elaine was kind of like our leader. But also we had Audrey Winnick from the Metropolitan Planning Council and Amy Rennell from Active Transportation Alliance, and Danny Robles from the Illinois Environmental Council. So those were the folks on our side, so to speak. Then we had Labor, and Francis is here, who is the legislative director for the AFL-CIO. Right. I think I got those letters right. Along with Tim Dre and Bob Ryder, was also part of the process, along with one of their consultants, Mary Tyler from the Illinois Policy. I screw up names. Excuse me. they were on the labor side. And then we had the representatives, of course, Senator Villavalem and Representative Delgado with their aides, and representatives from from the president's office, and then we had the governor's office folks, and the governor's office team was led by Bria Sutter, and they had about four or five different people. So those were the folks in the room. It was a large group, but even with that large group, not everybody talked, right? So there were representatives who would. Usually, one of the reps, one of the legislators, I should say, would bring up, "Let's discuss this thing today, right? This is on our agenda," and you know, it's like a negotiation process. If you've ever been in a negotiation process, we said one thing, Labor said another thing, governor's office said a third thing, you know, and so you go through that process, and finally, say, okay, we wrap that up, and then we would go to the next issue. So that was the way it proceeded.
Thank you. It's nice to have a feel for what it's like in that process. And Don, let me turn to you with the outcome of all of what Jackie just described. One of the key considerations, you know, we went into this with talk of a Metropolitan Mobility Authority. Pretty quickly, it turned to a focus on NITA, the Northern Illinois Transportation Authority. The idea of a more fully empowered RTA passed away pretty quickly. And now we have proposals for a new governing board, the NITA board. Describe for us kind of what we wound up with and the different, if you can, and I know it gets pretty technical pretty quickly, but you're good at this. You know, the difference between the way that the House is proposing the voting and the way the Senate is proposing voting structure on the NITA board.
Sure. David, thank you for the question. Thanks to the City Club for having us out this afternoon. I think towards the end of session, we actually ended up with two different products created by two different bodies, the Senate and the House. I think in the House, you really had a concentration in Rommel, or excuse me, Camel, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think in the House, the emphasis was governance. There was concern and discussion that was occurring regarding revenue, but I think their priority was the governance issue. And even Senator Villavalla, my chairman, all along during this process would say, we're going to need governments in order to get to the revenue. So the House concentrated on governance.
Which Chris Welsh was also saying in the House side as well, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. On the Senate side, the process had started out nearly a year and a half ago talking about A, governance, and then B, revenue as two separate pieces of, at the time, what our chairman would thought would be a two-part resolution. And literally up until the Tuesday before the last day of session, we were talking about two separate bills in the Senate, one bill for governance and a separate bill for revenue. Even though the labor bill, which became the vehicle that was going to carry this whole process, where governance and revenue were combined, the Tuesday before session, those two issues, governance and revenue, got rolled into one bill. And we had represented, on our side of the aisle, we had represented to Chairman Villavalla that would be a very difficult pull for us. We had very little interest in pursuing additional tax increases, tax revenues. It has always been our position on our side that there's plenty of revenue coming into the system. A $1.1 billion tax increase for a dollar and a half delivery fee for everything from groceries, prescription drugs, some of which were exempted, to pizzas and Chinese meals, anything ordered with a computer, with a $1.1 billion revenue increase attached to it, we always believed was going to be problematic. I believe that the Senate bill, which included governance and revenue, virtually collapsed under its own weight. Clearly, the House decided to take no position on that bill. I think conversations we've had continuing since the end of session tells me the House is still specifically concerned about governance before we even start talking about revenue to fix this fiscal cliff issue. The issue is the fiscal cliff. All of the invested parties that my transportation colleague, Jackie Grimshaw, I have utmost respect for this woman with her commitment and history to this community and this issue. Everybody came to the table when a large revenue stream started appearing. I believe the environment, I believe active transportation, I've supported many of the initiatives that these folks have all promoted. The issue is the fiscal cliff. If we don't deal with that first, which means we have to deal with governance first. This process will continue to fester throughout the summer. I don't want to get to I don't want to get to October. They've actually moved veto session up a month this year. It's now second and fourth week of October. I don't want to get to October and have a bill thrown on our lap, take it or leave it. It's happened before. It happened in May on our side of the aisle in our chamber. I don't want to see that process happen again. The sooner we can all get together, the House and Senate, the transportation leaders in both chambers, just like Rebuild Illinois, $45 billion investment in infrastructure. There were Republicans, Democrats, House and Senate at every single meeting for a month and a half, and that bill came together with bipartisan support. I believe this process is actually more important than Rebuild Illinois, because it affects so many more people on a daily basis, getting to work, getting to school, getting to the doctor, getting to the store. People need mass transportation in order to make their lives work.
So, Don, let's get to the governance question, because we're going to get to some of these operational and financial aspects a little bit later. Tell us a little bit about the voting structure of the two boards and the concerns you have about representation for the
suburbs.
Thank you,
Dave, for pulling me back and going there.
Yeah,
the soapbox pulled out of my under the table here. There were two separate governance issues. The singular, we pretty much agree on the structure. The new NITA board, the Northern Illinois Transportation Authority, looks like it'll be about 20 members. Five members from the city of Chicago, five members from Cook County, five state appointments, which currently are proposed to be the governor's appointments with no parameters or fences, and then five members from the collar counties, the five collars that make up the RTA region. In the House bill, the voting requirement for any action of NITA was described as being a minimum of 12 votes, with two out of five of each of the four appointed camps being required to pass anything. In the Senate, we had an option in the bill of that same requirement, 12 minimum votes with two from each of the four appointed camps, or 15 out of 20 of the appointed members. That 15 out of 20 created significant issues, not only for me as a senator representing the western suburbs. I live in St. Charles. I represent Kane, McHenry, and a western sliver of DuPage County. That created significant issues for the collars because we believed it gave the city, the county, and the governor's appointments, again with no parameters, all five of his appointments could have been City of Chicago residents, for those three groups to get together and virtually steamroll any issue that they wanted to take from the suburbs. My county board chairman, my mayors out in the suburbs are not interested in Cook County or the City of Chicago or the governor's office establishing our service levels in the suburbs, what we're going to be paying for fares in the suburbs, how much of the budget actually gets diverted to Metro or PACE as opposed to maybe coming back to CTA. For revenue enhancement purposes. We believed that the 12 minimum with 2 out of 5 camp was fair for everyone. We actually started out with 3 out of 5. That was our initial position. It went to 2 out of 5, which we were willing to live with. But that 15 out of 20 on the Senate side was an absolute killer for us.
And I'm curious, Jackie and Cam, what are your thoughts on that question? I mean, as we exist, RTA requires supermajority votes to do anything of substance.
Currently.
Right.
Correct.
So go ahead. Either one of you. Yeah.
Yeah. So the intent of this legislation from the very beginning was to create a regional transit system. And that means that we wanted to have service for all parts of the region, the best service we could provide with the money that was available. And starting with that idea and going to how does it get implemented is that there is no reason why anybody would want to steamroll the collar counties. You know, our transit system, if you get on the train in Chicago at Union Station and you go to out into the suburbs on the Metra, you know, service out there is what Chicagoans want. They want to be able to get to Wheaton. They want to be able to get to Naperville. They want to be able to get to Franklin Park. You know, that's what our transit system should be doing, because people work out there. People go to the hospitals out in the suburbs, and the suburbanites come in here. So we are one region, we are one state, and we need to have one transit system. So there is no reason to think that anybody would want to steamroll anybody else. I mean, just like the senator's concern about the counties getting steamrolled, what is the city of Chicago be concerned about it getting steamrolled if folks gang up against us for some reason? You know, so, you know, one of the things that Senator Lilienthal said all the time as we were negotiating, you know, it's shared sacrifice in terms of funding, it's shared rewards in terms of our governance and the provision of our transit system. So, you know, I can't imagine, you know, any reason to gang up on the suburbs. I don't know, Cam, can you?
No pressure.
So I think both to Jackie and Don's point, part of what we're trying to do here, David, I think it's not just reconfigure or remake a new transit system. It's really a new transit ecosystem that would hopefully move us further away from the parochial or provincial thinking that we all have, right? I often think about how to protect Chicago in these spaces, and I know that Don's doing his job for the people who he represents when he does the same thing. The fact of the matter is that that has been bred of the system that we have right now, where everything is competition and there's no collaboration, right? That is the reason that we begin this conversation in the first place. Jackie is right. When a person in Kane County, a single mother in Geneva who works downtown, takes the UP West, gets off at Ogilvy Station. By the way, Ogilvy, a Republican governor who truly believed in regionality, right? And takes the 7 Harrison bus to her job in the Loop. When she hits that venture card, if it works, Qubit, when she hits that venture card on the system, she doesn't care about who's quote-unquote in charge. She wants it to work, right? And so I think us remembering that piece of it, centering the people who use these systems, this system, has to be where we arrive on this thing. People don't care about RTA or CTA or MMA, which we didn't ever get to, or NITA, right? They care about GTW, get to work,
right?
GTS, get to school. And it's our job, frankly, to GSD, which is get stuff done. And if we can't, then WTF.
Yeah. So Dan's back there, and I'd be interested to hear from Francis, because labor had such a big stake in all this. So go ahead.
Make sure this works. Okay, Francis Aronik from the Chicago Federation of Labor.
Illinois. Hi, Francis Aronik with the Illinois AFL-CIO, and thank you all. It was great to be back in a transit space like this. Wanted to kind of lean off of Leader Buckner's comments. You know, people want to get to work, and I think that that's why labor kind of became part of this conversation. The folks at this table over here are representing over 15,000 members, union members that work within the transit system, and we understand that we need a regional approach while still having impact from stakeholders across the region that are represented and represent these systems. There are 5 or 6 counties across the RTA region, and we wanted to make sure that in the labor bill that we were taking in the impact of every stakeholder in that room, while understanding at the end of the day, people want to get to work, people want to get to school, and I think that through significant negotiation, we were able to land on a structure that maintained the 3 service boards, ensured that there was stakeholder support from each of the 4 camps, as Leader DeWitt said, and I think that the product had some give and some take, but at the end of the day, labor was in support of the voting structures that we had seen it.
For some users of the system, the idea that was floated originally about the Metropolitan Mobility Authority, which would have essentially eradicated the service agencies over time, your group opposed that. So help us better understand why that serves riders better, users of the system better, to not have kind of one agency running the whole system?
Absolutely. You know, each of the systems is incredibly unique, and they each serve a different purpose. And I think that from the folks that are on the ground delivering that service and maintaining that service, it became incredibly clear that maintaining the CTA, Metra, and PACE is independent agencies that do have a stronger overarching authority to increase coordination, increase connectivity, and that regionalized vision was an incredible goal. But going in and reshaping the system entirely and removing that individuality for the purposes that each of the systems serve, Labor did not think that, that was the most strategic approach towards reforming the transit system. I think that when you look at all of the legislation as a whole, you see so many comprehensive reforms coming in together while still maintaining the integrity of the individual systems on their own as well.
And if I could ask you one more, Francis. At one point, there was talk about seats being designated specifically for labor. That didn't end up happening in the language, I think, of the two bills that were under consideration. Is your group okay with that, or are you still looking for kind of formal designation of labor seats on the governing boards?
I think we'll always want a labor seat, whether formal or informal. We'll be continue to advocate for labor to have a say in those decisions.
Okay, great. Thank you very much. So throwing this forward, and Don, you said this should be done before, I guess, the veto session starts, sure. Which is a separate question. Let's talk about timing in a little bit. But first, between what y'all have said, it, to those of us sitting in the audience, that doesn't sound like that big a deal. I mean, a lot can get done with just the 12 votes that's required. It would seem that 15 out of 20 would be very rare that would be used. I mean, is this a deal breaker of an issue, or do you think resolution is possible? Go ahead, Don.
I'll take a shot. I can tell you that my mayors and my DuPage, my county board chairman out in the western suburbs are very concerned about the 15 out of 20 component. It's important to understand how the RTA system currently works. The RTA system currently works under a majority vote structure. In order to pass any, and I sat there for 5 years from 2013 to 2018 representing Kane County on the RTA board. Any item on the RTA agenda requires two-thirds vote to pass, 66%. Any financial matters, budget, long-term planning, debt service, requires a 75% supermajority. I sat on that board for 5 years. Not once did I ever see any particular, to Jackie's point, and she's not wrong, I never saw any component of appointees to the existing RTA structure use that to their advantage. It forces collaboration, it forces negotiation, and that system works. That's why we've always felt so strongly initially about the three-fifths out of the four camps and what appears to be now a two-fifths out of four camp being something that, frankly, we've negotiated down to and are willing to live with.
Doesn't it also lead to paralysis, though, if you need that big a majority to pass any action?
If anybody could show me any situation or scenario that's ever occurred on the RTA board since I've been there. I mean, I didn't see it for 5 years, and I haven't seen it since. I know there are current RTA members sitting in the audience today. I'd love to hear their perspective. I haven't seen it. I think that majority vote requirement works, and it forces the collaboration necessary when we're dealing with a system as complex as the RTA. And finally, I might add, the RTA will have authority over the three service boards, something they've never had. Performance, fare structure, operations will now be the responsibility of the NEDA board, and I think that's a very good thing.
Either of you have anything to add on that?
Yes. So one of the reasons why we were so intent on reforming the governance of our regional transit system is because those things that the senator just mentioned has never been done. You know, we have had, since 1975 or so, the RTA was created, and then it was majorly revised in 83, 84. The RTA has had the ability to take all kinds of actions in terms of service planning. You know, they've had that ability. They've never used it. They've had the ability to negotiate with the service boards in terms of their budgets, and they've never done it. I was on the CTA board for 6 years, and whatever we sent to the RTA is what our budget was. There was never any governance that says, no, you can't have a budget with this amount of money because of this reason, right? One of the things that was in the 2000, it was in the 75 legislation, the original RTA Act, and reemphasized in 2008 was the universal fare system. We still don't have a universal fare system. I mean, it seems like that would be the easiest thing for the RTA to correct, to put into place, but it hasn't been done. You know, the CTA, in fact, I was on the board then, we finally said, well, at least let's negotiate with PACE and get a fare card that riders of PACE and CTA could use, and that was the venture board. Metro said no. They didn't want to be a part of that. So that's eventually, I think about 5-6 years later, Metro came up with their version of a venture fare. So, you know, almost every single issue that you think about in terms of our transit system that isn't functioning is because the RTA never took advantage of the ability they had to actually govern the system. And so we wanted to have the reform include someone, something that is going to manage the system and give us that seamless travel that people want and love. I mean, Don was at a delegation to Germany where you could see seamless travel between city and suburbs, same fare, same vehicles, etc. Right now, we got CTA and PACE, different vehicles. You know, so, you know, it's going to take a while with a NITA board to get to the point where we have just one bus system instead of two bus systems in our region. So, you know, I could go on and on, but I know you want to ask more questions.
Sure.
So I'm going to shut up. But, yeah, so the thing is that we've never gotten what we needed out of the RTA since 1975. What is that, 50 years?
Something like that, yes. Okay. One thing that we haven't talked about yet that affects the whole system, and after this section we'll get to the revenue and we'll drill down on revenue a little bit, is safety. Safety in the system emerged as a really big issue during the course of these conversations, and there was, I think, general agreement both in the House and Senate on the approach to this, and I think Brad is here to tell us a little bit about.
Hi, I'm Brad Curry. I'm the Chief of Staff at the Cook County Sheriff's Office. So we started talking to legislators briefly early in the season, and one of the constant things that we heard is, you know, we need police, we need law enforcement. And so, you know, I think the reason that we came to the spotlight on this was because of the way we've addressed carjackings and the way we've addressed retail theft. And it was important, you know, anything that Sheriff Dart takes on, he hits it head on, and he looks at mainly data, like what is the data tell us, where do we need to be operational, what can we pull from it, and that's how we address carjackings, and that's how we address retail theft. And so one of the things that, you know, that we have learned over this process in talking to legislators and to writers is what they expect from a system, what do they want to see from a system, and what are the shortcomings that they have right now. And so we've learned a lot over this process that, quite frankly, we didn't know a lot about. And the good thing is that you can't police your way out of this. That's the main thing. This has to be a comprehensive approach where everybody does their part, and we have to have assurance from the riders that they feel safe. We have to have assurance from the riders that they feel comfortable and that they feel that transit's timely. that they get where they need to go on time. They get where they want, you know, that they can plan their day by knowing that they're going to have dependable transportation. And the second thing is having somebody that's a voice inside the system that will tell us, hey, this is where you're falling short, law enforcement. This is where we're falling short as a system. This is the issues that we see. And so the way we would approach this would be totally different. We're going to approach this in a way that we have everything else. It'll be data-driven. It'll be guided by what do we see operationally happening. And then taking that data and not just saying this is our plan and we stay with it, we'll evaluate that every day. We'll look at it. We'll see, is there something that needs to be different? Is there a way that we should approach this? Are we not meeting the needs of the riders? And then address those needs and figure out how we move forward from there. So we'll take a very, you know, if this ends up where we are the head of the task force, that will be our approach. And we will take that approach with input from everybody, from the transportation authority, from the riders, from, you know, citizens, anybody who wants to tell us what we're falling short of.
And I think people want to know, and I don't know if your thinking has evolved to this point yet, when somebody gets on a L train in Chicago, on a Metro train out to the suburbs, a Pace bus in the city or suburbs, will they see a uniformed presence and an armed uniformed presence? And if so, what uniform might those security people be wearing?
Well, that's a million-dollar question, David. So let me say this. You may see a uniformed officer. You may see a canine. You may see a lot of things. But what we will do is it will depend on the station and what's happening. It will be data-driven. It will be what's happening in that particular environment, and then decide what are the resources we need to address that issue in that area.
Do you think CPD will always police the CTA, or do you think it might be a separate policing agency working with a NIDA badge or something like that?
I think CPD will have to be involved. I mean, they'll have to be. They have great resources. They have great people. This isn't something you can police your way out of. But what I will say is, when we look to address this, it's going to take this task force. We don't know who's going to be on the task force, but what we do know is that the people who want to be on the task force are going to want to do it the right way, and that's what we're looking forward to.
Thank you. Thank you very much. So let's turn to revenue here. And Cam, I'd like to go to you. I hinted at this earlier. The House didn't put together a revenue package. Was work done? Were there pieces that maybe just haven't surfaced yet that the House, with a little more time, my question earlier, if you had a few more hours, could you have gotten it done, wasn't completely facetious. Where does the revenue picture stand in the House right now?
So we began to have some very early conversations with members about what they were willing to do when it came to revenue, right? What was on the table, what things were non-starters, and to Leader Delgado and myself, those were important, I think, touch points in order to figure out what the lay of the land was. Obviously, we had been saying, once again, since the beginning, structure and governance first. I think many people thought that we were just saying that. We actually meant it. If you ask any member of the Democratic caucus in the House, Leader Tarver is here, we did not. You know, we presented to our caucus a dozen times almost over the 4.5-5 months of session, and we never had a full throated conversation about revenue because we wanted to once again underscore the importance of structure and governance. Do I think that, you know, we've got folks are smart. They begin to start thinking about what options are there. There are not a lot of things that you can pull from in order to make this happen. There were some very tangential conversations about delivery fees, not the actual measure that the Senate took up, but something along those lines. What something would look like from a statewide perspective, because Don and Jackie and David, you've heard me say this. I think that this, while the Northeast Illinois region is the most important kind of part of this big conversation because we're moving the most people around, this has to be a statewide bill. We got to find ways to bolster, you know, SMTD in Springfield and MTD in Champaign and MCT in Madison County and up in Rockford. And you know, to me, as far as I'm concerned, Illinois is the transit capital of the country, right? And we've got a chance to get this right. And so There have been some more revenue conversations about how you do that and bring in the rest of the state. We just, once again, we didn't have the time to land where we wanted to land. But I would remind folks that while we still have some time left, it, to Don's point, it triggers us to be very, very intentional now and to work, I think, with a lot of speed to come to a conclusion on this. My hope and goal was that we were done on May 31st, but obviously we were not, right? And so, hearkening back to my first comments, just like the 8-8-88 game that only had 3.5 innings because it got rained out, they came back and played the game the next day, right? Which I think this is where we are right now with this. And we, in the next coming days and weeks, we have to start having serious conversations about what revenue looks like, what we can all live with, and how we create a bill and a structure that doesn't only save the northeastern sector of the state, but transit around the entire state of Illinois.
So among the various revenue options that have been discussed is this delivery fee, which was just mentioned, and Don's right. The estimates are that would generate potentially $1 billion or more in revenue. A tollway surcharge of 50 cents, $1 one day max. Extend the real estate transfer tax in Chicago to the collar counties. There's also talk of a refueling fee, whatever you want to call that. There are some concerns about, for example, the real estate transfer tax. How is that related to transit? I've heard that question asked a lot. The delivery fee, some people say, is regressive. If you're getting a delivery to your house and you have to pay this $1.50, it hurts a lot more in some neighborhoods than it does in other neighborhoods. Just if you would each kind of comment on whichever is most concerns you or whichever you think is the and also I should mention that using the interest from the road fund, which we discussed on our pre-call a little bit, which of these like really appeals to you and which of these really concerns anybody on the panel? Go ahead, Don.
Thank you. Well, for starters, the surcharge on tollway fees went away. That was contained in one of the original amendments in the House Bill 3438, which was the labor bill. That went away. The collar counties hated it. And I raised the issue. Bless you. I raised the issue with my chairman in committee in Springfield. I asked him to count the number of Illinois tollway booths in the city of Chicago. There aren't any. He then suggested, or there was then a conversation, I'm not sure if Chairman Villavallen brought it up, there was then a suggestion, well, there's a lot of people who live in Chicago who use the tollway system. Well, that may be true, but we went ahead and pulled the tollway numbers, and only 8% of the total revenue being paid to the tollway comes from residents living in the city of Chicago. So clearly that was a problem for a lot of people. The statewide delivery tax, you know, we looked at it from our standpoint. We looked at it when it was a regional tax that was only going to be collected in the RTA region. The decision was made to make it statewide when it was determined that last year in 2024, there were nearly 750 million online curbside deliveries made in the state of Illinois. And we started looking at states like Minnesota and Colorado who have implemented that same model of an online delivery tax. But we structured ours a little bit differently than those states have done it. In Colorado specifically, that's the one I looked at hardest, that $1.50 fee doesn't kick in until your order hits $100. So someone having economic challenges having to pop for $15 or $20 worth of groceries for that buck, and they've got kids at home and they can't get to the store, that $1.50 might make a difference to them. The governor made a big deal about the reducing the grocery tax last year. That was only 1%, but it was going to make a difference in people's lives. We view this delivery tax the same way. Again, like I said previously, I think there are other revenue streams currently available that if the decisions were made in this state to prioritize mass transit funding, I believe there are ways to get to a number that solves the fiscal cliff without having to pass billion-dollar tax increases in order to come up the revenue to do it. We just have to put our heads together, to Cam's point. We have to put our heads together, decide what are going to be our priorities. The CMAP report, and I'm going to pick on the administration for just 20 seconds. The CMAP report clearly indicated that of the six major transit systems in this country, Illinois is the absolute worst in its contribution to its mass transit systems here in the RTA region. And the only group worse than that is our Washington delegation, because the federal commitment to mass transit in Chicago is the worst in Illinois of the six major mass transit systems in the country. We've got to put our heads together and find more logical existing revenue streams to solve this problem. I believe it can be done.
And Jackie's leaning forward.
So. At the end of Senator Villavalem's presentation to the Transportation Committee on this bill, the last thing he said is that if you have any ideas for revenue sources, bring them to me. And so, Don, what are those revenue sources? I mean, you know what we came up with. You don't approve of most of them. So what do we do? I mean, we have to fund, as you say, you want to close the cliff. Well, you can't close the cliff with wishful thinking. You got to close it with some revenue. So if our ideas are unacceptable, what's acceptable?
We're having those conversations right now, Jackie.
So
and I'm not about to negotiate them here at this table.
Oh, okay.
Come on. Everybody would love to watch.
Let me jump in just real quick on that, David.
Yeah.
So when you're talking about revenue enhancements, tax increases, there is no answer that makes everybody happy, right? So we have to remember that, number one. Number two, many times when things like this come up, folks, in the policy world, we push back because of what we think or what we hear from our constituents. I heard many of the same issues that Don brought up about the tollway surcharge. And I heard that only 8% of Chicago drivers are using the tollway on these trips. What I also know is that 25% of tollway trips are taken by folks who don't live in Illinois. You can't give me one other revenue possibility where you get to charge a quarter of that to folks who don't live in the state, right? I think that's pretty cool. Because those folks don't vote for me, they never will, because I'll never live in Indiana, right, or Wisconsin, or Iowa. So it's a balancing act here, right? We got to figure out what makes the most sense. But to Jackie's point, we're at the point now where we got to make a decision, right? And the things have to be on the table. We can't just pontificate ad nauseum. We got to have some very clear-cut suggestions on the table. We need to run them through the wash to see if they make sense, because if not, we'll be back in the same position. And then Keith Hill will have to tell his employees or his members that we didn't do the right thing, and now they're out of a job, right? So it's time for us to move on this.
Okay.
Go ahead, Don. Yeah, I am going to throw one of the potential revenue sources out that
we've been talking about.
and frankly, it shouldn't come to a surprise to anybody that fares are going to need to be a part of this restructuring program. Fares haven't been discussed on any of the bills that are being proposed, either the House bill, the Senate bill, or the labor bill for that matter. When you have an agency as large as the CTA that hasn't touched their fares since 2018, I mean, the world has only turned inside out since 2018 with everything we've gone through the last 6 or 8 years coming out of a pandemic. I believe that needs to be reviewed. Metra was in Germany 6 months before we were. And any of you who travel Metra realize they've just gone through a significant fare restructuring based on zonal travel. They have kept up to speed with where they need to be from a financial standpoint. But I think, in fairness to the CTA, we're not going to pick on them. If there's going to be fare adjustments for the CTA, there's going to need to be fare adjustments for Metra, and there's also going to need to be fare adjustments for Pace. Pace is in the same boat as CTA. They haven't touched their fares since 2018. Somebody paid $2.50 to ride a bus from Evanston to here today. $2.50. It cost me $14 to get from Geneva to Chicago and back on the Metra system. A lot of the revenue certainly comes out of the city of Chicago, but the suburbanites are paying a hell of a lot more money to access this mass transit system That needs to be brought up to a level playing field, and fair structure has got to be a part of this equation. And it's significant dollars.
So I'd like to, we're going to start winding up a little bit. There's been some discussion of the work that needs to be done between now and the veto session, etc. I want to get to that. Meanwhile, we were expecting somebody from RTA. Rob, was Rob able to make it? Or
Rob is here. But if there is anyone from the RTA, please speak up. But I don't think Rob made it.
Tom, would you care to speak on behalf of
I don't know what train he's taking.
Sure. You're going to get me in a lot of trouble with Rob.
Yeah.
Tom Kotarek, member of the RTA board. So this is a great question on the interim period. I think this matters a lot. You know, during our board meeting, we discussed this last week, told everybody my May 31st or else, and now we're in the or else phase. The RTA board will vote on July 9th, really taking a page out of the legislation in Springfield and creating an interagency board working group to plan for this unfortunate, you know, deadline that is going to be facing us in 2026. I think really the question for you, and that's taking board members from CTA, board members from Metra, board members from PACE with the RTA, because we can't have a situation where if, God forbid, you reach the cliff, everybody's planning individually, and we're running 5-minute PACE service to the Jefferson Park Blue Line, and the station's closed. That it really has to be looked at holistically, as much as we have to look in the future to do this the right way. With NEDA, I think that this scarcity moment, you know, presents the same sort of opportunity to work together. And I'm really curious for the panelists, you know, what's your recommendation to the transit agencies and the RTA on how to really play this moment between now and when that cliff hopefully never hits, but, you know, in this interim period?
Yeah, Tom, thanks for that. I think it's a really important question and a really important point. So for those of us who have been worrying about this and thinking about this for, you know, 2+ years now, maybe even closer to 4 when we first suspended the fare box recovery ratio during COVID, we knew it was coming, right? And we began to plant little seeds about coordination, about regionality, about making this system work for everybody. And a lot of it was may language, not shall language, right? And we saw that, to Jackie's point, we're still having a conversation today that we began in 1973 and then 83 and then 2008 about fair integration. And we didn't, as far as I'm concerned, see the proper response when it came to working together, right? And so that led us up to the point where we were now crafting a bill, which the MMA bill did was consolidate everything. And folks like me who were fingers crossed behind my back, like, please get a clue, take a clue, figure this thing out, right? So we don't have to do this. And it still hasn't happened, right? And so we've landed on where we've landed on with NEDA, and I think that that's something that we all agree on and we'll move forward with, and we'll figure out the other pieces of it. But now that this is the or else portion, as Tom talked about, after May 31st, I would implore RTA, CTA, Metro, and PACE to work in conjunction with each other to at least get this part right. The burden is on us in Springfield, and I'll say that strongly and loudly. We've got to figure out how to get past any differences we may have and make this happen. This is not just important for today. Like, we're building a system of the future, and our legacy depends on this. In 50 years, someone else is going to sit at this table, and I'd be damned if they say Don DeWitt and Cam Buckner effed it up, right? I think, and that should be a serious concern of ours. So we're going to get this right. We're going to fix it and fund it. The agencies and RTA need to, in the period between May 31st and whenever we can land the plane or land the train, whatever it is on this, they've got to show that they can work together. They got to show real intentional regional coordination.
So let's talk about that time window. There's some discussion that there was going to be a summer session. I haven't heard that lately. And waiting till veto, even though veto's been moved forward, there are typically, 6 days of session in veto. Not sure if that would be enough time. Is there a possibility of a summer session? And, of course, there's some talk about, because of the federal circumstance, there might also be a need to address that during a summer session. What is the view of people on this panel about whether there needs to be one and whether something good would come from convening over the course of the summer?
Well, I certainly think there needs to. I'm sorry, Jeff. You want to go ahead?
No. You have the ability to make it happen. I don't think you do. Only I can do is complain.
You bring
about
a little
it.
Perspective to the question, though, Jackie. But let's get both of you all on this.
Sure. Well, I think the question is, do we need to do one? And I think we do. We will certainly all, the vast majority of us, will all be down there again in August for State Fair Week. I mean, there's Governor's Day, which gets a big Democratic turnout. There's Republican Day, which gets a big Republican turnout. They've already started scheduling some committee meetings those 2 days in Springfield. JCAR, which normally meets here in Chicago during the summer, we're going to meet in Springfield that week. So we could be back as early as August. We could be early as soon. We could be back as early as the Speaker and the Senate President decide we need to be back, frankly. The other point I wanted to make, this is a real deja vu moment for me. My very first meeting with the RTA in September of 2013, we started a conversation about scheduling public hearings to start reducing service, because at that time in 2013, the RTA board was managing the system, and none of the service agencies or the RTA management at the time could come to an agreement on what to do with the budget. And the only alternative was to start, if there's not going to be a budget, we have to start public hearings to start announcing service cuts. Here we are again, 22 years later, and we're in the same boat. But now it's on the legislature. And to Cam's point, I think we have an obligation to come together when we need to come together. It can be literally at a week's notice. We could all be called back to Springfield to deal with this issue. I'm going to continue to do my part regarding my interests in this process. We are having virtually daily conversations with members of the other side, members in the other House, trying to come up with solutions that everybody can come to an agreement on. And when we get there, I believe that session will come together very quickly and we'll get this done in an equitable, fair, and comprehensive fashion.
And Jackie, what did you want to say on that?
No, I just, you asked the question, do we need one? And the answer is yes, we need a summer session. And so, as I said, you know, these guys are legislators and they can talk to their leaders and ask them to call a summer session, you know, or talk to the governor to say, call a summer session. Only I can do as an advocate is advocate, right? And we're going to be doing that, advocating to the governor, to President Harmon and Representative Welch or Speaker Welch to, yes, you know, this is something that is going to affect the state of Illinois. If we have to cut 40% of the transit system, then you're going to see a downsize in our economy. And if Chicago economy goes down, the state's economy goes down. So, you know, this is urgent. And, you know, we can't wait to the 6 days in October to get this done. It's just much, much too late.
David, a quick point on the mechanism, just so folks know. So the governor has the ability to unilaterally call a special session. The leaders of the House and the Senate also do with a 3/5 majority, right? So 3/5 of the people in the chamber have to, in the affirmative, vote yes in order to have that special session. Are we at a point now where we need one? I would agree with both the Senator and Jackie that this is a special situation, and so a special session may be warranted. But I want to remind folks that we still have some work to do. If we called a special session next week, nothing would happen because we're not ready, right? And so I think what we do first is we've got to get to the point where we're in agreement and we have the consensus of what we need to move forward, because you don't call a special session to negotiate a bill. You call it to pass it. And we've got to be able to get there first.
Thank you. And the governor's title has been brought up several times here, and it brings to mind a question I've had during this process. And I think we've all observed that Governor Pritzker kind of likes to let the game come to him. He doesn't intervene early on, but he obviously has a lot to say toward the end of legislative processes. What do you see to this point the role of the governor? And let me expand that as well, the role of the mayor of the city of Chicago, who is also a key stakeholder and typically a key player in circumstances like this. What has their role been to this point, and what does their role need to be in order for us to get a good resolution of this challenge?
And I'm sneaking in here to ask you to keep it quick because we're going to wrap up. Thanks.
Sorry. Thanks, Dan. One or two words each. No, just joking.
I'll be as quick as I can. I think that both the governor and the mayor heard us in the legislature say we've got this. And I think because of that, they trusted it and they kind of let it play out the way that it has. Obviously, we have not come to conclusion yet what these extra innings that we're in now does. I think it gives them the opportunity to reengage, and I see a desire from both of them to do that. We've gotten, once again, it seems like we're far apart. We're not. We've done 89%, 90% of what we need to do is done. And so we'll close the gap on that 10%. But I do see now a role for both the chief executive of the city and of the state to push a little bit to make sure we get there.
And don't leave out President Preckwinkle.
That's true.
I would agree with Leader Buckner. I think the mayor, President Preckwinkle, and the governor all recognize the same significant issues that we all need to address. I'm hoping that they will all be willing to step up to the table when we come up with a final solution. I think we're very close on the governance issue. I think we need a little bit more work on the revenue issue. And I guess I would leave today's conversation with saying that they are all going to be asked to be a part of that solution. I think the governor actually made the same comments yesterday in a press conference. We're all going to have to be a part of the fix to make this happen.
Well, thank you very much. I think one interesting thing to be watched is if the structure that is laid out and pretty much agreed to remains in place throughout the conclusion of negotiations. I know there's some concern about what looked like a deal is not yet a deal. I appreciate the sense of urgency that everybody on the panel is expressing, and let's hope that that sense of urgency applies as the work continues quietly behind the scenes and then maybe around state fair time. So thank you all panelists. Thank you all in the audience. Appreciate your attention to our discussion.
And thank you, David, and thank you for bringing this idea and the work to this. This is civic engagement at its best. This is government obviously working with each other on different sides of the aisle, also working with advocacy, working with labor, working with public safety. I mean, this is your government. This is your city and your state in action. And you don't have to be an elected official. I think you all know that. And it's pretty neat to see this. And we are committed as City Club to hosting more of these conversations. And I just say all that because I want to hear more of those ideas and bring more of you to this room, to the stage, and to these conversations. Because I'm hoping that after today, we have a little. We're one step closer to getting something done, and not necessarily prescribing exactly what that'll be, but understanding that we have to get there, and gathering the right people to share the right ideas. If you have any great ideas, especially on funding, on revenue, here are your folks. This is where things happen in this room. So thank you, and thank you all for your time today and for all of your efforts on this and all the other issues that you're dealing with. It's not just transit. Very much appreciated. We have a lot going on here as well, so I'm just going to take a moment to mention that we have Stacey Davis-Gates from the CTU on June 23rd, Commissioner Boatwright, Sierra Boatwright from Planning and Development on the 25th. And I'm sorry, that is heavily sold out, so hopefully you have your ticket already. Mariana Spiropoulos, the clerk of the Circuit Court, on the 26th. Wow, we have a busy week. Revitalizing Historically Disinvested Communities with BMO and United Way on July 9th. Brookfield Zoo, A New Era for Wildlife and Conservation on July 23rd. We're hitting all sorts of topics, and there's so much more to come, from transit to animals to you name it, buildings and cranes. We're going to tackle it here, and we appreciate all of your membership. We appreciate your support and just your time being here. Thanks again, David Greising and the BGA, for the partnership on this. Senator DeWitt, Representative Buckner, Jackie Grimshaw, these are some of the most brilliant minds on this issue, and there's more to come. Thank you all for being here. We'll do this again soon.